Welcome to Season 2 of the Voce Dialogues, Voices of Compassionate Evolution. Hi, I'm Chloe Goodchild, founder and author of The Naked Voice. Transform your life through the power of sound. The Voce Dialogues provide a platform to share and transmit the many ways in which your embodied, authentic voice is the essential catalyst for compassionate communication. Enjoy these magical new dialogues with friends and companions, visionaries and activists, sharing their healing revelations and stories of compassion in the world. Enjoy. Well, hello, friends, and welcome to another wonderful dialogue with the mighty Jim Garrison, Dr. James Garrison. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Chloe. Pleasure to be with you today.
Great to be in this conversation with you. Thank you so much. If you're not so familiar with the extraordinary life of Jim Garrison, I'm just going to give you a little bio just to lead us in, and then we'll dive into the whole conversation around the nature of compassion, compassionate action. So Dr. James Garrison is founder and president of Ubiquity University. He comes to this having served as founding president of Wisdom University, which he led from 2005 to 2012, after which he transitioned into Ubiquity. He has spent his entire professional life in executive leadership, including as founder and president of both the Gorbachev Foundation in the USA from 1992 to 1995, and the State of the World Forum from 1995 to 2004 with Mikhail Gorbachev, serving as convening chairman. He attended University of Santa Clara for his BA in history, Harvard for his master's in the history of religion, and Cambridge for his PhD in philosophical theology. Jim has written 7 books, beginning with The Plutonium Culture in 1979, to his current book in writing on climate change and the primordial mind. Jim taught regularly throughout his tenure at Wisdom University on Greek philosophy, world history, and the philosophical implications of global warming. Just a few really significant themes for our time. And Jim now continues to teach at Ubiquity, but also I'm excited for you to tell us, Jim, about your new work actually in Washington, D.C. as well. And so always with these dialogues, I just love to ask the question, what is your understanding of compassion and how has compassion shown up in your life, albeit as a human being in your own private experience of compassion, every bit as much as your extraordinary public work to further compassionate communication, conscious communication in the world. So over to you.
Thank you, Chloe. It's always good to be with you and to just be in your presence. I would say about this issue of compassion that I think compassion in our time is emerging in some ways as more urgently necessary than even love, because compassion is that aspect of love, I would say, that empathetically feels the suffering of others. And the suffering that we're witnessing around the world right now is unsurpassed in, I think, modern times, and affecting all of us everywhere. And I think of particular poignancy at this moment is what's going on in Gaza, as we're witnessing essentially a genocide in broad daylight against the Palestinian people by the Israelis. And I want to take a moment to explore this, because I think compassion is the only emotional response that I've been able to feel. It's striking to me that the anniversary of Kristallnacht in 1937 on November 9th, 1937, where the Germans massacred over 100 Jews, destroyed 30,000 businesses, damaged and desecrated over 200 synagogues, injured over 30,000 Jewish citizens in Germany. They destroyed homes. And that night on November 9th, historians demarcate as the beginning of the Holocaust.
Oh, yes.
And it was extraordinarily striking to me that the anniversary of Kristallnacht, November 9th, 2023, coincided with the Israeli assault on Al-Shifa Hospital.
Oh my God.
In Gaza. And what struck me as I just observed what the Israelis were doing to the Palestinians, are doing to the Palestinians, is it replicates what the Germans did to the Jews in the 1930s. And if you look at the instrumentality of coercive power, rounding people up, killing people en masse, random arrests, torture, you see everything that the Germans did now being applied to the Palestinians. And at the culmination of that Holocaust, we saw, you know, a concerted attempt at genocide. And what we're witnessing now, as the Kristallnacht was the beginning of the Holocaust, what I think is happening now in Gaza is the beginning of the end of the genocide against the Palestinian people. And the whole world is watching. And I, as I've been thinking about it, I've been struck by another symmetry between what the Jews experienced at the hands of the Germans and what the Palestinians are experiencing at the hands of the Israelis. And that is the Warsaw Ghetto. It was in 1942, after the Germans had put the Jews in Warsaw in the same kind of concentration camp that the Israelis have put the Palestinians.
Oh my God, yeah.
That the Jewish young people basically rose up between April 16th and May 17th, 1942, and fought back. And they fought back with such a ferociousness that they stopped the German army. And even though it ultimately won, the Jewish revolt at that moment signaled that it was the first time in the war that the Jews actually struck back in a meaningful way against the Germans. And how did they do it? They went through the tunnels.
Aha.
And when you think of the way that Hamas, completely defenseless against one of the greatest armies in the world, without an air force, without an army, without tanks, without any large weaponry, and yet still fighting for the liberation of their people. What are they using? They're using the tunnels. And the Israelis are doing the same thing, going down into the tunnels with the tear gas and the chlorine gas and the guns to wipe out Hamas, just like the Germans did to the Warsaw Revolt. So the symmetry between the oppressed people now becoming the oppressor and doing essentially the same thing in an attempted genocide has elicited from me more compassion for the human race, because it is unimaginable that after what the Jewish people suffered at the hands of the Germans, they would be doing the same thing to the Palestinians. Yeah. It almost defies belief. And it elicits a deep pessimism about human nature and a great pathos for the suffering of the world. And that's what compassion means. It come to suffer with the person that you're witnessing. Right. And so compassion has been moving through my heart and soul and my body at decibels or kind of volumes that I haven't experienced in recent memory over the agony of what's going on in Gaza. It's completely biblical. Mm-hmm. It's apocalyptic. And it's happening 24/7 right in front of us. And it's shocking.
Yeah. It's often been said, hasn't it, that it takes war. It takes a war. And there's something like over 100 wars going on across the planet, apparently, at this time, which is also, I mean, just equally, additionally, completely unimaginable. That it takes war to bring people together. And I noticed that the next book that you're working on at the moment refers to the primordial mind. And I'm wondering if that in some way is calling us, whether your understanding of that primordial mind, if that is in some way calling us to a deeper state of suffering with, a deeper state of being able to transmit that suffering which we share, to be able to transmit a way of being that unearths the collective human spirit, or certainly the individual human spirit, in a way that requires us to go sort of deeper within ourselves than we've ever been. I'm fascinated by this primordial mind that you're unearthing also in your own journey.
Well, I think the primordial mind is a vast subject and term. I think what is resonating for me, mm-hmm. as I, in the case of some of the writing that I'm doing around climate change and the primordial mind, but also I would apply it to Gaza, I would apply it to Ukraine and what's going on mm-hmm. there and other issues around the world. Mm-hmm. The human race, insofar as I can discern our current state, is a complete separation mm-hmm. from the primordial mind out of which we came. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a pathway back to the primordial mind, which is the most urgent necessity confronting the human species at this moment. The technology to solve all our problems has been around mm-hmm. for decades.
Right.
We know what peace would look like in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. We know what peace would look like in the Ukraine. It's perfectly obvious mm-hmm. that in the Middle East, for example, we need a two-state solution and equal sovereignty for the Palestinians mm-hmm. as for the Jews. Mm-hmm. It's completely obvious. Mm-hmm. We're just not implementing it. Mm-hmm. And so we're in a world situation where it's our consciousness mm-hmm. rather than the problem itself mm-hmm. that is precluding us from applying the solutions that are just simply lying around in broad daylight. And right. I think that question of consciousness is what opens the portal to the primordial mind. And that pathway of remembrance back to who we most essentially are, and that is children of the earth, first of all. Mm. We came out of Mother Earth, mm. and therefore we're one with the mother. We're mm. one with not only each other mm-hmm. as the human family, but one with all the other species that also have come out of the womb of the mother over time. Mm-hmm. And it is our capacity to remember that, at least for me, gives me the container within which I understand all human events, mm-hmm. including my own life. Mm-hmm. And then held in that, the womb of compassion, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. as the Buddha called it, the womb of compassion. The emptiness in the womb of compassion does not have a separate self. Mm. It doesn't have a distinguishing boundary between me and you and mm. us and mm. them. That's a delusion of the human mind born out of the emotions of fear and greed and hatred and avarice. Mm-hmm. And so it's that meditation on the primordial mind, which I think the indigenous people to a large extent carry in our time, and the light carriers, you know, such as yourself and such as all the light carriers are carrying little nodes of primordial consciousness that are reminding people of what we've collectively and individually forgotten.
Absolutely. Yes to that. It's interesting because I'm just involved in a project that's unfolding here on the one small town of Ubuntu, of Michael Tellinger's work from South Africa, which has sort of caught the imagination of my locality here at this time. And I'm also reminded in your speaking of the fundamental sort of 4,000-year-old or just infinite knowledge from the Upanishads, you know, of Sat, Chit, Ananda. I would love to know how this understanding has, how it entered your life. Obviously, very aware of this extraordinary collaboration between yourself and Gorbachev, for example. And now, obviously, with your present work in Washington, D.C., who were the influences behind that? How did all of this come about? How did you find yourself in these situations? There's got to be some serious depth of fierce compassion to oneself, but also a quality of fearlessness around what one's doing, because we have no choice but to do this. And it's not about protesting in the kind of dualistic sense of protesting anymore, because we've tried that as a collective. And that just creates more duality, if you like. I mean, it has its purpose, of course. But then also having had the privilege of working with you in Chartres Cathedral, you know, with that whole Pythagorean understanding, you know, of generating, you know, the seven pillars of consciousness, you know, through the seven liberal arts and so on. I'm just really fascinated by how this is all constellated in this way in your life.
Well, it's a huge question.
Yeah.
What I would say is that if I look back just quickly, I think my first experience of deep compassion happened in India in 1965 in Calcutta.
Wow.
Where we went as a family traveling around Asia. And we came into Calcutta. I can still remember getting off the airplane. It was 127 degrees.
Oh, my God.
About 40 degrees centigrade or something like that. It was just unbelievably hot. And we went to a hostel. And my mother and father were missionaries in China and then Taiwan. And then we were just traveling back to the United States through Asia. And the missionary we were staying with said, you know, you need to see various things, but the one person you need to see is this nun named Mother Teresa, who collects babies that have been thrown away. And so the next day, we made our way, walking through the streets of Calcutta to her little Missionaries of Charity house. And at that time, this was way before she was famous, way before she'd established a world network. This was her one little place in Calcutta. We met her and she saw the babies and walking there, we saw the wastage of human life. And we passed a place where you walk down the street and all these beggars that were all deformed, their arms were crooked and their legs were crooked. Turns out their parents had done this to them to make them more grotesque so that they could earn more money for the family. And when I heard that, I was only like 15 years old, and something broke inside me that anybody would do this to another human being, particularly parents to their own kids. Mm-hmm. And then Mother Teresa, whitewashing the babies and caring for the babies. And I just, something expanded and something broke. And I think it was my first experience of deep, resonant pathos with a suffering that I completely could not understand. And I think that awakened something in me that never then went away. And then, you know, when I was doing my doctoral work at Cambridge, and the question that I was asking was, why is it that after 4.5 billion years of evolutionary life on planet Earth, our species and our generation has brought the entire life process to the brink of extinction? What are we doing to ourselves?
Yes.
What are we doing? And then people would always say, well, of course we need nuclear weapons because the Russians are so bad.
Mm-mm.
So I thought, I'm going to go to Russia. I'm going to see if the Russians are as evil and satanic as I'm being told. Mm. So evil, so satanic that we need to be able to blow up the world
mm-hmm.
in case they attack.
Yes.
So I went over there in the fall of 1982 and realized these people were just like us. They were friendly. They were happy. We had parties together. We sang Beatles songs together. I had this incredible love affair with this Russian interest guy. I realized that they were just like me. There was no reason to go to nuclear war. And then when I was coming back to England, because after the 2.5-3 months were over, I specifically took a train to Poland and went to Auschwitz.
Wow.
And I sat for an entire day, a rainy, cold, late October day in Auschwitz. And it just happened. I was the only one who had come that day. So I had the experience of sitting for hours with my back against the gas chambers, feeling the rain.
Right. Yeah.
And realizing that I was in the epicenter of evil on earth.
Right.
In all of history, there's never been an evil more malignantly toxic than the Holocaust. And just to sit there and take it in and feel the energy of Mother Teresa, to feel the energy of love that I just experienced with the Russians, that my own country, the United States, was developing nuclear weapons against, I realized the poignancy of depravity and what all the major religions say, one way or another, that the human condition is disconnected from that which it most essentially is, and that our lives are pathways of waking up out of the stupor of separation and allowing our whole beings, every cell, to be filled with a pathos for the suffering that's caused because we're disconnected.
Right.
And out of that comes the energy that leads us on our way back.
Right.
Back to the primordial mind. Mm. Back to the love that endures. So I find that the more that I contemplate suffering in the world, the more compassion is generated in me till, you know, you just feel it all the time and you become incapable of hurting anything.
Right.
I mean, even little insects or little, you know, you just realize and you're naturally becoming a vegetarian. You know, you're just naturally living, you're naturally walking more lightly on the earth because of the reverence that you feel for the life that you yourself are partaking in this nanosecond that's going to be gone.
Right, right. So here we are, right? We have been so blessed to live a journey, and we're really strongly into it right now. Here we are in our 70s. And my own master and under my ma in India, she used to say, this journey we're on is a journey of grace and gradual revelation, right? And so here are you, here am I, the Ubiquity University, Wisdom University, you know, your connection with Gorbachev, the Berlin Wall coming down, you know, I mean, And myself very blessed to work with, the Dalai Lama and working with Eve Ensler and people, and bringing sort of understanding the nature of the power of frequency, the frequency of love, the frequency of compassion to shift large numbers of people for a moment in time. So now the question is, one level, one sort of egocentric with the best of intentions, one's egocentric mind is going, well, is that going to be quick enough to save the humanity? rather than, actually something else is going on. Something else is happening now. We don't have to make effort in the same way as we used to think we had to. There's a sense of, oh my God, change, the grace of transformation seems to be happening more from a state of receiving. Obviously, a lot of people are talking about ascensional energy, but as one of my Indian vocal teachers said, Chloe, what goes up must come down. So it is that, but it's almost a sense of a lot of people are talking more beyond that kind of conversation to, a receiving of intelligence that is beyond what anybody taught us about on this planetary field, which then brings us more into an awareness of the compassion that can be received from other domains of consciousness. And I don't know whether you feel to talk about that at all in relation to the work you're moving into now. For example, I'm very, very inspired by the work of, Dr. Stephen Greer, for example, and his work with, on the one hand, his real encounters with benign beings of light, whatever you want to call them. So I'm just really interested to hear what you have to say, because he obviously is able to not only himself has had this extraordinary graceful life of having received information from other dimensions of consciousness, but also has been in a position to be in the forefront of really evolving, that the whole free energy conversation and all of that. I'm sort of concertinaing something huge into quite a small conversation, but I wonder if in the light of your present life experience, whether you'd like to say something.
Well, the reason why I'm in Washington, D.C. at the moment, and the office where I am now is literally across the street from the Supreme Court and across the street in another direction from the U.S. Capitol. So I'm at the epicenter of the U.S. government. And the reason why I'm here is because the U.S. Congress is in the process of passing legislation. It started in 2022 to begin a 7-year plan disclosure starting in January of 2024 through 2030 to disclose to the American and world public the information that's been garnered by U.S. military intelligence, commercial energy agencies, and contracting defense corporations about the UFO phenomenon. We're at an extraordinary moment in human history where, after 75 years of very coercive repression of any information about unidentified flying objects, which are now called UAPs, unidentified anomalous phenomena, which is a more encompassing, comprehensive term. Mm-hmm. The very government that has gathered most of the information and kept it militantly secret is now under the aegis of the U.S. Congress, beginning a process to disclose this information. And that's going to be a milestone that will go down as perhaps the most momentous event in the history of humankind, because it's going to be a disclosure to the global community all at the same time that we are not alone, that extraterrestrial intelligences and present and operating on planet Earth for some time, most actively since the end of the Second World War and the ignition of nuclear weapons technology, and that there is evidence of sustained contact. The U.S. government, by all accounts, has retrieved, not only in the United States, but other parts of the world, upwards of a dozen flying saucers from outer space, and several dozen extraterrestrial non-human bodies. And so there's incontrovertible evidence that the human race is not alone. And so what we're going to be undergoing, Chloe, is really, if you think about it historically, the second Copernican revolution. The first one back in the 1600s, demonstrating by Copernicus that the sun, not the earth, is the center of the solar system. And the solar system is not the center of the universe. It's a minor part of a minor galaxy called Milky Way. And there's gazillions of galaxies. They have no idea how many galaxies because they can't count that high. And now we're being told incontrovertibly what we never surrendered in the first Copernican revolution. And that is that, well, that may be true, but humanity is the apex of creation. We're at the top of the food chain. And now we're being told that we're just as insignificant as a species as the Earth is a planet against the vastness of a living universe. Billions and billions of other extraterrestrial life. So this is the first moment where the human race is being invited, compelled to look up. And so the task that I have as the director of the Washington office of the New Paradigm Institute, which has been set up and is actually referred to in some of the Senate legislation that's about ready to be passed, is our job is to work with the Congress and the other agencies of government to assist in the gathering of the information and then work with the disclosure to the larger public. And this is where I believe compassion comes in.
Yes.
Because if you think about this moment of disclosure, what the extraterrestrials have been telling us around the world, and there's been sightings and communications and contact, not only in the United States and Europe, but throughout Latin America and Brazil mostly, and Argentina and Chile and in Central America and Mexico, all over Africa, all over Asia, in Russia, in China. This is a ubiquitous phenomenon. And there's been thousands of people who've had reported communications with ETs. And what is the most consistent message that the extraterrestrials are telling the human race at this moment? Stop killing each other.
Stop
killing the planet. You've become a virus in your own ecosystem. And above all, stop your nuclear weapons. Because if you use nuclear weapons, you're going to set back planetary evolution by thousands of years. And it's taken us a long time to get here. So what now needs to be taken out into the global domain, which I'm part of now in a singular way, is we need to use this occasion of awareness of extraterrestrial presence on the Earth to do exactly what they've been telling us to do, and that is to radically transform human relations from competition and destruction into harmony and synergy with the planet, so that the human species becomes one with the planetary ecology out of which we come, primordial mind. And as I'm increasingly, Chloe, beginning to understand it, to come into a realization of why we have been evolved in the first place. Because if you think about it, we are the only species that is capable of taking Earth consciousness off the planet. We've already been to the moon. We're sending probes out there. Now the rest of the galactic intelligences and civilizations are contacting us in a conscious way. They've been shutting down multiple times our nuclear missile silos, our nuclear power plants, because they keep warning about the danger of our nuclear technology. And if you think just for a moment here, last Friday, President Biden, with great fanfare, said that his goal, along with 10 other nations, including England and France and Germany, have committed themselves to triple the amount of nuclear power plants and nuclear energy by 2050. That's how out of touch the United States is.
Yeah.
Biden is not only completely incompetent, but he's gone psychotic. The United States is fomenting war in Europe and Ukraine against Russia, given the Israelis carte blanche to commit genocide in the Middle East. And now they want to build hundreds more of nuclear weapons that produce plutonium waste that you got to contain permanently outside of any turbulence for the next 20, 30,000 years. Are we out of our minds? It's madness. And so this question of compassion, this question of transformation of consciousness, and what's now emerging with the UAP, UFO phenomenon in the disclosure, it's the first time in the history of our species where humanity, no matter who you are, no matter what you believe, no matter where you are, we can all now embrace the same narrative.
Right.
That we are one family, and we are now need to come into a symbiotic relationship with each other, with the planet. And just imagine if humanity then becomes the ambassadors of Earth out into the galactic life forms that are there, but as positive, harmonizing influence, which is what any species that's existed for millions of years more than we have would naturally come to, because that's the only way to survive long term in an evolving cosmos.
Right.
So this is an extraordinary moment of, I know we have a time limit, so let me close with the final image.
You have as much time as you like.
It's a beautiful symmetry to me, Chloe, along the following lines. If you look back between 1945, 1947, there was an amazing synchronicity of three major world events. Number one, the development of nuclear fission, which we promptly used to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki and initiate nuclear weapons technology. Almost simultaneously to that, Albert Hofmann discovered LSD in Switzerland. And thirdly, simultaneously with that, came the emergence of the ET phenomenon in a very concerted way. And it was at Roswell in 1947, right within striking distance, as it were, of Alamogordo, where on July 16th, 1945, they ignited in the Trinity test, they ignited the nuclear fission for the first time. That a month later, then they dropped those bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where the ETs came at Roswell and a craft actually crashed in alien bodies, where so that the nuclear age, the psychedelic age, and the modern age of extraterrestrial contact all happened virtually at the same time. And if you fast forward to the present world condition, with Ukraine and the Middle East, we're now in more danger of nuclear weapons use than at any time since really 1962 and the Cuban Missile Crisis, when we almost went to war. Psychedelics are now experiencing a renaissance and are spreading all over the world with plant medicines.
Huge.
And the U.S. government now is going to be disclosing to the world that we are not alone, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And it's time for the human race to wake up.
To wake up.
Our primordial mind because it's out of that that we came. It is back into that that we need to return so that we can embrace the destiny for which our species was created by the mother.
Beautiful. I was just actually listening to Coldplay's incredible, massive, mega hit, Lights Will Guide You Home. I know, lights will guide you home and ignite your bone. As you're speaking, I'm just aware of the increasing sort of awareness of the power of frequency itself. Frequency as music, frequency as loving kindness, frequency as compassion. So yes to these times. When you actually translate them in that way, they become just mighty, don't they? I mean, we suddenly realize now is the time for this, the reemergence or the anchoring ourselves deeply, deeply, deeply down in that primordial voice, the primordial mind. And so you can imagine people listening to this will go, yeah, well, that's all very well. But a lot of people still sort of, you know, bought into duality and the dualistic thinking and depression and the acquiescence and the incapacity to do anything. But actually, even these beings, like come unto me, all that travel and are heavy laden, the suffering itself becomes a medicine. That becomes its own medicine, like homeopathy is medicine. So the suffering that we're seeing still playing out, like we've never seen before, is actually the antidote of that. Well, in my language would be a kind of music of consciousness, where people actually remember the true sound, the true sonic field of their own human body field. And so that it's not about singing. And I mean, I remember being in Madison Square Gardens with Eve Ensler and 20,000 people in that context, where the central catalyst for that inspiration is not some godforsaken pop star in the middle of the garden, but is actually 20,000 people who are receiving what is in the center of the garden back to themselves and then giving voice to that. So it feels as if we're in this time of receiving this extraordinary inspiration that you've just painted for us. We're in a state of receiving that. So it's not like we've got to sort of work hard to make it change. As Bishop Tutu said, it's already happened. You know, it's already happened. You know, it's that understanding that it's already happened that is so important, isn't it?
Indeed.
It's already happened. Dear Jim, thank you so much. Thank you so much for just catalyzing this conversation around this new work that you're doing and every good wish and love from us all to you and to what you're walking in there and knowing that you're not alone. You're not alone. Your voice, your very, very articulate, fearless voice is playing itself out in a new and very empowering, compassionate way for everyone. So every blessing to you.
Thank you so much. Blessings upon us all.
Blessings upon us all indeed. May compassion reign. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this dialogue, please consider visiting our Patreon page where you can support and help us to spread the word about these compassionate conversations. Please visit patreon.com/VoceDialogues for more information.